like to turn to Psalm 85, 13 verses. We'll read all 13 verses. Lord, thou hast been favorable unto thy land. Thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. Thou hast forgiven the iniquity of thy people. Thou hast covered all their sin, Selah. Thou hast taken away all thy wrath. Thou hast turned thyself from the fierceness of thine anger. Turn us, O God, of our salvation, and cause thine anger toward us to cease. Wilt thou be angry with us forever? Wilt thou draw out thine anger to all generations? Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? Show us thy mercy, O Lord, and grant us thy salvation. I will hear what God the Lord will speak, for he will speak peace unto his people and to his saints. But let them not turn again to folly. Surely his salvation is nigh them that fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven. Yea, the Lord shall give that which is good, and the land shall yield her increase. Righteousness shall go before him, and shall set us in the way of his steps. In the first three verses, the psalmist begins by looking back on where they were at one time, looking back on what the Lord had done for them. You'll notice twice in verse 1, twice in verse 2, twice in verse 3, a total of six times, you read those words, thou hast. So he's referring to things that the Lord has done for them. In other words, he's recognizing the blessings of God upon their lives. He's recalling God's favor. He mentions that in verse 1, thou hast been favorable. He's recalling God's goodness to his people, showing that God has, he's recalling how that God has shown gracious preference toward his people. He also recalls the intervention of God. He says, thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. He's recalling how God reversed their lives, changed their course. He goes on and he talks about being forgiven, forgiven the iniquity of thy people, how that their sins are covered, how that God has taken away his wrath. And of course, God has blessed us abundantly in salvation, blessings that we cannot comprehend, blessings that we cannot possibly number. God has been favorable unto all. But God has been favorable especially unto his people. And we need to think upon these things because God has been so, so very good to us. Then in verse 4, after contemplating the blessings and the goodness of God toward them, he comes to the painful realization that as the favored people of God, as the recipients of God's mercy, as the recipients of God's goodness, that they as a people were not what they should be, nor are we, nor were they where they could be with God, nor are we. And we see that the Lord was not pleased. He prays there in verse 4, "Turn us, O God of our salvation." So he realizes that once again they needed God's intervention, God to turn them, change their direction. But he also realized that God was displeased. He said, "Turn us, O God of our salvation," and then he says, "and cause thine anger toward us to cease." And this has been going on a while, because in verse 5 he says, "Wilt thou be angry with us forever?" So they've been in a position for a while now where God is displeased. Then, of course, we come to verse 6, which is about the middle of the psalm. It's really the heart of the psalm, and the psalmist makes a personal plea to God that God would revive His people. And it's from that we want to take the thought of the message. We've preached from this psalm many times. If the Lord allows us, we'll preach it many more times. But we want to speak on the subject of what is our attitude toward God-manufactured, God-sent revival. That's really the only kind of revival, real revival, that there is that which God manufactures, that which God sends. More often than not, when God's people think of revival, they think of it in the collective sense, usually in terms of nationally. Pray that God would revive the country. They think of it in terms of ecclesiastically, revival in the church. And without a doubt, these aspects of revival are greatly needed. But when we think of revival, we need to always think of it in personal, in a personal and individual way. We need to always think of it that way. Because there cannot be collective revival without personal and individual revival. And it seems to me that a lot of people want collective revival, but they don't give much thought to individual revival. What is collective revival? It's enough individuals getting revived. You can't have collective revival without having individuals revived. So if enough individuals get revived, you'll have revival in a collective sense. If enough of God's people were to get revived in the country, you could have national revival. If enough people would get revived in the Lord's churches, you could have ecclesiastical revival. But you cannot have national revival, and you cannot have ecclesiastical revival bypassing individual revival. So we need to always think of it in the terms of personal revival, individual revival. First of all, there is such a thing as revival. We see that from what the psalmist prays in verse 6. Revive us. This is something that is spiritual. Revive us. The word revive, of course, has reference, and again we're speaking spiritually, has reference to a spiritual restoring, a spiritual recovery, a spiritual awakening. No doubt we need a spiritual awakening in our country. There's no question. And there's no question that we need a spiritual awakening. Individuals need a spiritual awakening, a spiritual arousing, a spiritual stirring, a spiritual stimulation, a spiritual refreshing, a spiritual resurrection. That's revival. It has reference to spiritual renovation. The word revive, it's the result of a visit from God Himself. Not just a visit, but it's the result of an outpouring of God Himself upon lives, upon individuals. In revival, God does a fresh work in His people. In fact, it's described as such. In Acts 3, verse 19, we read of times of refreshing from the presence of the Lord. That's revival. Times of refreshing. And notice it doesn't just say there in Acts 3, 19, times of refreshing from the Lord. Times of refreshing from the presence of the Lord. In revival, God's presence is made manifest in an undeniable way. It is so manifest that even those who are in the audience that are not revived, they cannot deny what they've seen. That's a revival. There is such a thing. There is such a thing as spiritual revival. It does exist. It's a real matter. And as we speak, there is such a thing as revival. Every day, there is such a thing as revival. That ought to immediately get our attention. There is such a thing as revival. In our current day, in perilous times, when marriages and homes and churches and lives are being robbed and brought to ruin, there is such a thing as revival. It's real. In these days when God's people, so many of God's people, are being courted by and drawn to the filth of hell's crowd, there is such a thing as revival. We must never lose sight of that. There is such a thing as revival. The problem is that it has been so long in the hearts of many since they've even come close to experiencing revival, they don't even believe it exists. But it does exist. There is such a thing as revival. In this day when so many of God's people have had their hearts stolen and have fallen victim to the procedures and to the plans and to the techniques and to the traps of Satan and to the world, there is such a thing as revival. Don't ever forget it. In this day of when so many are distracted, when the spirit of worldliness has a death grip on the hearts of so many of God's people, there is such a thing as revival. In a day when much of spiritual interest and enthusiasm and conviction has been swallowed up by an antichrist world, there is such a thing as revival. In this day in which we live, when many, most of God's people have more interest in the world than they do God, they are more willing to invest in the world than they are God. They are more invested in the world than they are in spiritual things. And their priorities are in the world rather than spiritual things. And they're more dictated by the world than spiritual things. There is such a thing as revival. In this time when so many of God's people, their lives are more characterized by unbelief than by faith. Their lives are more characterized by worry than assurance. A time when their lives are more characterized by frustration than peace and contentment. And when their lives are more characterized by discouragement and misery than joy. And their lives are more characterized by doubt rather than conviction. There is such a thing as revival. In this time when, to many, the things of God have become stale, the service of the Lord is mere mechanics, and the ability to worship God, if it isn't, it's almost extinct. But there is such a thing as revival. In this day of platitudes, when many of God's people are content with mere lip service, when God's people call Christ Master, yet obey Him not, they call Him Light, yet they can't see Him, they call Him the Way, yet they don't walk in Him, nor do they have any intention of walking in Him. They call Him wise, yet they refuse to follow Him. They call Him lovely, yet there's no attraction. They call Him all, yet they do not seek Him. They call Him King, yet they do not serve and honor Him. They call Him Almighty, but they can't trust Him. That's lip service. That's all platitudes. That's why Jesus said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" And as you read through the Old Testament, you see that it's something that absolutely sickens God. Lip service. We live in a day of lip service. People have learned the language, but they don't live it. But there is such a thing as revival. We can rejoice to know that there is such a thing as spiritual restoration. There is such a thing as spiritual recovery. There is such a thing as being uplifted spiritually. There is such a thing as a spiritual awakening that lasts longer than a church service, that lasts longer than a day. There is such a thing as spiritual stirring and provoking, and there is such a thing as a spiritual push from the Lord Himself. There is such a thing as spiritual energizing from God, spiritual rejuvenating from God. There is such a thing as a spiritual recharge from God. Revival is real. Revival is feasible. The very fact that there is such a thing as revival, again, it ought to get the immediate attention of God's people. There is such a thing, again, as revival. And in such, in all revival. Can't have it without this. The Holy Spirit pricks and smites the heart of His people concerning sin. We'll never be revived minimizing, hiding, justifying, defending our sin. In all real and true revival, there is a revealing of sin. So in all true revival, there is a great pain that smites the heart when our sin is revealed. And in all true revival, sin is not revealed in just a general way. Specific sins are revealed. And they're not only revealed, but they are seen in their true character. And we are brought face to face with our sins. As a result, we're brought low. We're convicted. We're burdened. We're brokenhearted. You know, people say all the time, and I know what they mean, but there's some truth to it. You stepped on my toes. You know, that's our problem today. That's as far as it gets. And that won't help much. True revival, there has to be a smiting of the heart, causing us great travail of soul, causing us great grief over our sins. People are grieved over things that they should not grieve over. And things that they ought to grieve over does not bother them. Real revival causes us to grieve over sin. I mean, grieving more than we would over the death of a loved one. Grieving over sin. There is a hatred of sin. We hate it so much that we turn from it, that we forsake it, that we flee from it. This takes place in all revival. And as we forsake it and as we flee from it, there's victory over sin. Thanks be to God, there is such a thing as revival. There is such a thing as revival, and in such hearts are changed. Hearts are humbled. Hearts are made to tremble before God. Hearts are warmed and made tender. Hearts are made responsive to the voice and to the movement of the Lord. Hearts that are so crowded and so packed full and so distracted and pulled with the things of the world and the ways of the world are changed. And they become focused upon God. They become fascinated with God. And they become absorbed with God and the things of God. Hearts that are filled with their own ways and agendas are made submissive. Hearts that are complacent and unconcerned are made passionate for God, for the things of God. Hearts are made to acknowledge God, and as a result are filled with thanksgiving. You acknowledge God, you'll be thankful. Hearts are filled with peace and assurance of God. Hearts are filled with song. Hearts are made to be dissatisfied and dissatisfied with the status quo, and are changed into a heart that longs to be more like Christ. to be more fully surrendered to the Lord, to be more obedient to the Lord, to be more closely identified with the Lord. You see, a revival will always restore the wonder of salvation. When the Lord saved our soul, there was a wonder that filled our hearts. And revival will always restore the wonder. In a revival, there will be a spiritual overflow. It says, the psalmist said in Psalm 23, my cup runneth over. My cup runneth over. Today, we live in a time where people are almost afraid they're going to get too much. What's wrong with having cups overflowing? My cup runneth over. Thanks be to God, there is such a thing as revival. There is such a thing as revival, and in such, not only are hearts pricked, not only are hearts changed, but of course the result of that is lives are changed. Revival will make God and the things of God real. Revival will make God and the things of God, it'll make it your life. It's what revival does. Revival will remove formality. Revival will remove that which is merely mechanical. And revival will give power. It'll change our attitude. It'll change our practice. It'll change our attitude toward the Word of God. It'll change our attitude toward one another. It'll change our attitude toward worship. It will make men to be the husbands and fathers and the men that they ought to be. It'll make women to be the wives and the mothers and the women that they ought to be. It'll make children to be the children that they ought to be. It'll make God's people to be the citizens that they ought to be the employers that they ought to be the employees that they ought to be the neighbors they ought to be the church members they ought to be. Revival will do this. And there is such a thing as revival. It's real. Revival, of course, is, if you hang around Baptist churches for any amount of time, you'll hear that word. It's in the Baptist vocabulary. Revival. Usually when people use that word, they're describing a series of church services in which a visiting preacher comes to preach. And sad to say, that's what revival has come to mean to many. But revival is not merely a Baptist word. It's a historical fact. It'll thrill your soul and it'll also be somewhat depressing. But it's also somewhat hopeful and encouraging to read the history of revivals. It's a wonderful thing. History records great revivals. Revival is more than just mere hearsay. It's something that's actual. It's definite. It's genuine. It's visible. It's something that can be confirmed. Make no mistake about it. There is such a thing as revival. And the characteristics and the results of revival are brought forth throughout this psalm. We'll mention them here quickly. We see revival from verse 4, turn us, results in a change of direction. And I guarantee you, every single one of us in some area of our life needs a change of direction. Revival does that. He goes on and says, cause thine anger toward us to cease. That means there's an improvement in relationship with God. Revival does that. It improves our relationship with the Lord. There's enabling power in revival. Verse 6, wilt thou not revive us again that thy people may rejoice in thee? A lot of things God's people might like to do but can't do because they need reviving. Reviving gives enabling power. In revival, there is an open display of God's mercy. We see in verse 7, show us thy mercy. Grant us thy salvation. In other words, there's a deliverance that takes place. Verse 8, I will hear. In all revival, people hear personally from God. We see also in revival, there is a break from sin, but let them not turn again to folly. There's a break from sin. There's a break from foolishness. We see there's reverence. Verse 9, fear him, that glory may dwell. In revival, there is a manifestation of the glory of God. Again, we're talking individually. We see truth is magnified in revival. We see the land will be blessed and bring forth increase. We see there's conformity. So set us in the way of his steps. These are things that characterize revival. And there is such a thing. There is such a thing as revival. Not only is there such a thing, but revival is possible. It's possible. It's a possibility. It's a possibility for all the Lord's people. It is a possibility for all of God's people today. It's real. It exists. And it is a possibility. That ought to interest us. That ought to get our attention. The psalmist believed this. And that's why he pleaded, wilt thou not revive us again? This is not a pipe dream. It's a reality. It's a possibility. It is something that we can personally experience right now. Revival is within the realms of possibility to each and every one that are saved. It's not just merely a topic of conversation. It's not merely something that we can dream about and imagine. It's something that we can personally experience. It's something that we can have right now. So revival is real. And it is a possibility. Thirdly, it is of God. It is of God. There is such a thing as revival. And there is the current possibility for each one of God's people to be revived. But you can be sure of this. Man cannot produce revival. Never has, never will. Man cannot manufacture revival. Man cannot give birth to revival. Man cannot create revival. And you can't legislate it either. There is such a thing, as revival. And it is a current possibility. But no amount of human ability will bring it about. No amount of human planning will bring it about. In fact, revivals aren't planned. They just happen. No amount of human methods will bring them about. No amount of human calculations will bring them about. No amount of sermons will bring about revival. No amount of personalities will bring about revival. And certainly you cannot buy revival. No expense can create revival. But there is such a thing as revival. And it is real. And it is a possibility. But it only comes from God. It only comes from Him. And it must come directly from God. It has always been, and it will always be the work of God. Revival. It is a result of the work of God. It is a result of the inner working of God in the lives of individuals. It is the result of God stirring within individuals. It is the inner movement. It is the inner exertion of God within the heart of an individual. It is an inner disturbance. Before a revival will ever occur, there will be an inner disturbance. Again, the heart will be pricked. The whole congregation is laughing and carrying on. I'm here to tell you, there's not going to be much reviving. Because reviving, there's going to be an inner disturbance of God that compels you and I as individuals to follow the leadings of God, whatever they are, and to follow the promptings of God, whatever they are. Know today there is such a thing as revival. Know today that it is possible. Know today that it only comes from God. All of that should get our attention. And that brings us to our final point. Knowing these things, knowing that there is such a thing as revival, knowing that it is possible, knowing that God is the giver of it, knowing that we are painfully in need of such, we ought to desire such. And therefore we go to God, since He's the giver of it. Wilt thou not revive us again? That word again means it happened before, but it needs to happen again and again and again and again. Why? Because of our sinful flesh. Because of our natural inclinations away from God. Because of the work of Satan. Because of the draining effect of the world. Because of the fact that you and I very easily get into a state of spiritual decline and in a state of spiritual coldness and apathy, and we very easily find ourselves at a distance from God and detached from God, and we find ourselves in a state of emptiness and bareness. These things happen. And therefore we need reviving. Because of the emptiness, because of the barrenness, because of the days in which we live, when the form of godliness is readily substituted for the power thereof. People today, for the most part, are very content with the form. Don't mess with my form. I've been working on it for years. Don't mess with it. And they get very upset if you mess with their form of godliness. You can preach on anything, but don't get on their form. Because now you're upsetting their whole life. But we live in a day when the form of godliness is readily substituted for the real thing. Because of all these things, every child of God, to one degree or another, needs reviving. And knowing that there is such a thing as revival, knowing that it is possible, knowing that such comes from God, see, just now it just makes sense, doesn't it, that we go to Him. As the psalmist did here in Psalm 85 in verse 6. You see, the more we see our personal need of revival, and the more we long for revival, the more often we find ourselves pleading with God that God would revive us. The psalmist prayed throughout the 119th Psalm, "Quicken thou me," which is the same as saying, "Revive me." And the more we plead with God for revival, the more fervent we become in our pleadings for revival. Again, a lot of people talk about revival, but how many people pray? Because you can talk about it all day long, it's not going to bring it. How many people pray for the Lord to revive? How often and how fervently do we seek the Lord to revive our hearts? There isn't a day that goes by that I do not need reviving. There is not a day that goes by that any of us do not need reviving. In some area of our life, you may think you have one area down, but I got news for you. There are a lot of other areas that you don't. We need to carefully and honestly examine our own attitude toward a God-manufactured revival, toward a God-sent revival. Again, we're talking about a revival that will upend my life, that will just turn my life upside down. A revival that will hurt my self-esteem. A revival that will disturb my comfort zone. A revival that will cause me to relinquish control of my life. A revival that will cause me to let go, or to be willing to let go of all my plans. A revival that will not allow me to stay in tune to the world. Again, I'm not going to get on Facebook, but Facebook and all the technologies we have today allows us to stay more in tune with the world. And I'm telling you, it's a problem. We need a revival that will cause us, that will not allow us to be so in tune to the world. A revival that will cause us to be more and more of a stranger to this world. A revival that will make me more identifiable with Christ. A revival that will move me from looking at Jesus in the ordinary religious way. There's a message in that. If we're not careful, we'll look at Jesus in the ordinary religious way. We need a revival that will cause us to look, to move beyond looking at the Christian life in the routine way, in the religious way. Again, we're talking about a revival that moves us beyond the status quo. that moves us beyond run-of-the-mill Christianity. Run-of-the-mill Christianity is nothing. It's empty. Talking about a revival that takes us beyond the church service. About a revival that will cause us to always be climbing higher spiritually. I think of Jacob's ladder. It wasn't his ladder, but you know the story. That ladder is always before us. Oh, how we need to climb. But that ladder works two ways. God comes down, we go. But we need to always be climbing higher spiritually. I'm talking about a revival that is literally an outpouring of God upon our lives. Think about the day of Pentecost. That's basically what happened on the day of Pentecost. There was an outpouring of God. That's revival. An outpouring of God. We don't believe in sprinkling for baptism. Yet many are content to just get sprinkled with a few spiritual truths here and there. We need an outpouring. We need to be immersed in God. So we need to ask ourselves, each one of us individually, what is my attitude towards such a revival? What do I think? I mean, literally, really be honest. And this isn't a question you just don't... You can't answer real quickly. You need to really think about it. What is our attitude toward such a revival? Would I like it if my husband or my wife or my child really got revived in this way? Because if they did, it might upset your whole life. What is our attitude toward this reviving from God? I believe we need to answer this question. Are we afraid of it? I believe many are. I believe perhaps we all are to some degree. Are we afraid of a revival from God? That's pretty sad if we are. We need to honestly ask ourselves that. Do we try to resist revival? Today, you can go many, many churches. And you see the same thing happening everywhere. Preacher can preach his heart out. Soon as the person is called upon to pray to dismiss services, people start talking about the world. What did we just meet for? I mean, that there isn't anything more discouraging. They start talking about the world. They've heard a message. And 45 seconds after the message, it doesn't take that long, the first words out of their mouth is about the world. What's the point? Reviving. I mean, do we... I think that's almost a built-in mechanism to resist revival. I heard what the preacher said and it bothered me. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the world now, whether we do it consciously or not. I believe it could be a built-in mechanism causing us to resist the movement of God. Are we willing to honestly examine our attitude, our thoughts toward revival? I believe that if God got a hold of some individuals, it would scare some family members half to death of that individual. That's sad. We need to ask ourselves, do I desire this kind of revival? You can ask everybody here tonight, do you desire Home Baptist Church to be revived? And everybody will say, yeah, that would be great. There's only one way that can happen. And that is if each individual gets revived. And that's a completely different question. Do I desire to be revived? Not only do we desire it, do we long for it? There is such a thing. It's possible. It's of God. Do we long for it? Do we thirst for it? Do we go to Him and ask Him to revive us as only He can? Do we seek revival? Do we seek it? There's only one place to seek it. There's only one who gives it, and that's God. Am I willing to cry out to God to revive me? You know, we'd be much better off when problems come into our lives, instead of the first prayer out of our mouths being, Lord, deliver me from this. Lord, take this problem away. Lord, revive me. Because then, whether the Lord takes the problem away or not, you're able to deal with it. That should be our first prayer. Lord, revive me. Revive me. The truth is, we don't even know what to pray for unless we're revived. Am I willing to beg and plead with God for revival? Again, it's easy to pray for someone else to get right with God. We can all pray that. But when we're burdened about someone else that's obviously out of fellowship with the Lord, you know the best thing for us that can happen is for us to get revived. And for us to take care of our own spiritual health. Because then maybe we can help the individual. Maybe we can deal with it better. This ought to always be our prayer. Revive us. It ought to be the individual prayer of every child of God. For God to revive us. Some of us, through the years, have been in services and we've seen God came down. I mean, there's no doubt about it. God came down and got a hold. Maybe of ourselves or others. And it's always when that happens, we wish it happened more. And I believe it would if we really sought it. But revival will make the revived glad, and it'll scare the others half to death. But we need that. We really do. We need God to pour out Himself upon us. That's what I need in my life, for God to pour Himself upon me. That's what you need in your life. That is revival. But it will not last for the rest of our lives. We'll need it continually. By the next day, you're going to have to pray again, Lord, revive me. Keep unreviving me. Keep unreviving me. God help us. I believe that almost everyone here, again, would rejoice to see revival. But it needs to start with us individually. That's where it needs to start. needs to start with individuals. And oh, we ought to pray for such. We ought to pray for such every single day of our lives. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.